Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we set up an epic conference call.
So everyone, please put your phones on mute.
Okay, so Patrick, we're going to do something a little bit different on this episode. Couple things a little bit different. First off, we're going to do a group Skype call. And that was already set up because today is a patron episode with patron Scott Parks. Hello, Scott.
How's it going, everybody?
We're doing well. And Scott wanted to make this a bigger episode, bigger in every way. Technologically, and then just, you know, in grandeur. And so he suggested that we have another guest join us on the call. So that, and this is international even too, this crosses borders. There's all kinds of taxes and tariffs involved. It's, you know, there's, you know, exchange rates, everything happening here. So he wanted to have a guest on, and that guest is Heather Valley. Hello, Heather.
Hi, everybody. How are you?
Okay. So then Patrick, who lives near me, couldn't make it over to my house tonight because of a family matter. We don't need to get into all that. No. So this is the first time ever that we have been on the same podcast, but not in the same room. The first time ever out of like, what, 800 episodes, something like that?
That's right.
Back since we started in 1964.
Yeah, that's right. And I will tell you, if you remember this, Jim, the blizzard of 59... Back on the old show, we actually did. Remember that? We were snowed in.
Yes.
We actually did one other episode. That was a different, that was the old podcast. So that was
That's right.
59.
You're right.
The roads were not as good. And I love the sound of your ice clinking in your bourbon glass there, Jim. What are you drinking? You must be drinking something good.
I have some Maker's 46.
Oh, nice.
Maker's 46 in a 1976. Oh, Scott, wait, we have Scott on the call. I'll just whisper this to you, Patrick. In a 1976 Indiana Hoosiers National Championship glass that I have right here.
Heather, don't pay any attention to this Indiana stuff. It's something different.
I didn't do that on purpose. But
we're,
anyway.
we're rivals, Heather, just so you know.
Yeah.
Purdue.
Friendly rivals, right?
Friendly rivals, correct.
That's right. Okay. I do like Drew Brees a lot. Let me just say that for the record.
Yes. Totally, man. Me too.
Okay. But Heather is calling in from the area of the world where they only have three downs
per possession,
right? Per first down. And that would be Canada, right?
That's right.
Okay. So, Scott, why don't you introduce Heather to our audience?
Sure. So I met Heather, I'm not even sure how long it's been, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago in a Jason Molina fan group on Facebook. And at that point, we were just both Jason Molina fans talking to each other on Facebook with a bunch of other Molina files, Magnolians, whatever you want to call us. And she mentioned that she'd put some YouTube videos up of her singing Molina songs, which I found, you know, fascinating. I really enjoyed them. And just a little while after that, she released her first single called Lovejoy. And it's been kind of a whirlwind, I think, for you, right, Heather?
Yeah, a lot has happened since then, actually. I released Lovejoy, which was an acoustic track, very, very simple, with a little bit of vocal harmony. And then right after that, I released a song called American Paint, also simple, but incorporating pedal steel done by Mike Brenner, who was a longtime collaborator of Jason Molina's.
So far I can't say it ain't been that great, but I'm turning it around. That desert road I've been on, so shot my horse under me. He was
So through that individual song project, we ended up working on this record behind the scenes for about a year and a little bit. And that just came out this past November. And it's been picked up quite amazingly well. I've got a lot of people listening in Europe, in the Netherlands in particular. We just got reviewed in the Philadelphia Inquirer. Things are really good this year.
That's wonderful. So tell us a little bit, Heather. By the way, this is Rock in the Suburbs. I always forget to mention that, especially when there's so many people on. I get a little bit confused. But Rock in the Suburbs, and I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And we mentioned Scott Parks, and this is the patron episode. So if you go to patreon.com/suburbspod, you can see how to be like Scott and be on the show and pick the topic and invite a friend of yours, too. Like,
that's right. And get records. Something and get we records, will do. Too.
And get records, all those
and get
things.
Get records. That's the most important part, get records.
So anyway, so Heather... and you're in Hamilton, Ontario, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, home of the Tiger Cats, and not far from the world champion Toronto Raptors. I should also give a shout out to that great team. But anyway, this is a music podcast, and I want people to understand where you're coming from here, because I read your bio, and it's quite an interesting story, to say the least. So can you tell people a little bit about how you got on this musical journey that you're on?
Okay, so I have never been accused of being short-winded. I will tell you that to start off.
We got time. We got time. Go ahead.
Neither have I.
So I followed a lot of paths in life that I thought were the ones I was supposed to be on. And that led me ultimately to becoming a lawyer. I was a family law lawyer in a small blue collar town kind of outside of Hamilton. I had a lot of student debt from law school, and I was essentially trapped. I found myself listening more and more to Melina's music, which I had known about for a while, but it essentially became my soundtrack almost exclusively for 5 years. And, so that's Jason Molina. He operated under the monikers Songs Ohio and Magnolia Electric Co. while he was productive. And I know Scott Parks through our common interest in Molina's music. So that's how we all connected. Over that period of time, I was extremely isolated. Like, I was doing very well in my career, but I didn't know anybody in the town. And I was working 70-hour weeks. And I was occasionally posting covers of songs that I really liked on YouTube, playing guitar in my house and like my bedroom. I wasn't playing out, that kind of thing. And under Don't This Look Like the Dark, a cover of a Molina song, somebody commented saying, I do a cover of this myself, but yours is a lot better. For some reason, that comment stuck out to me. And a few months later, this person reached out to me through a YouTube messaging app, which I didn't know existed at the time. And we struck up a friendship and eventually met for a week at a cabin in upstate New York. And that is the person who came into my life and really turned everything that I knew upside down. I thought I fell in love with a person who turned out to be a con man. So if I were to fast forward several years, that eventually led me to have a complete breakdown. I was trying to compartmentalize this completely out of control personal life with this person who was just chaotic, and a career that required me to play this role as a entirely ultra competent, strong factor for justice in people's lives. I went down to Florida for a week to see this con man. He proposed to me while I was down there and gave me a diamond ring. And then the day that I came back, my mentor, who was like a father to me, passed away from a heart attack. In the weeks that followed that, I can just say everything in my life broke down. The con man couldn't handle not being the focus of all of my attention and tried to cheat. I tried to leave him, and within 8 months of that, I had a massive breakdown, was forced by a doctor to leave my career, and he was arrested for the second time that I knew him. So around that point in time, my breakdown manifested as anxiety, depression, just this inner chaotic feeling after having been attempting to deal with normalizing life for so many people on the outside for so long, you know? And the one thing that kept grounding me was picking up my guitar. Over the course of time that I knew the con man, the guitar that I had disappeared, and I can only, by best educated guess, assume that it ended up in a pawn shop in Buffalo. So I bought myself a guitar, started playing songs on that guitar, and that's the acoustic that you see in all of my videos and photographs on Instagram and social media now. It's actually named after a Melina song. The guitar's name is Shiloh. Gravitating toward writing about that experience was the way that I was able to navigate myself out of it, you know? So shortly after that is when Scott and I met for the first time, to circle back to the start of the story. And it's really just been a process of trying to figure out how to live my life in a way that is fulfilling on the one hand, and actually contributing something positive to the world. As much as I thought that law was the right place for me to be to make a positive change, my experience with it taught me that there's a lot of injustice in the world. The justice system is very broken, and probably the best thing that you can do is to try to make other people feel less alone. That's what Jason Molina's music did for me. That's what I would really like to do with music myself.
That's a beautiful response, Heather. I greatly appreciate that. And while that sinks in, Jim and Scott and everyone, I just want to ask you, why do you think music heals us so much after something tragic or unexpected happens in our lives?
That's a really good question. I think there are probably some common elements of it that would apply to me and to you and to your listeners. And then there are probably some very specific things that are unique to the type of person that you are, you know? The thing that helped me was I always felt and was told that I was a little weird, you know? I saw more than what you just see on its surface in the world. There's more of us.
I never heard that.
For me, it was a little bit more of a spiritual meets reality type of way of mitigating the world. And that was something that I saw reflected in Melina's music. So hearing that for me in a time when I felt very alone, and because of the nature of my job, unable to show the weaker parts of my personality, it was a salve. It felt like I had kindred spirits in the world somewhere. At least he exists. There must be others, you know? And through the community of people who connect with his music, I have been able to find a lot of people like that.
I think a lot of people, though, given an experience like yours, would not necessarily, quote unquote, sort of treat it the same way. You know, they might do more, I don't know, destructive things, you know, might turn to more destructive tendencies, right? So, you know, how did you find your way through that? And you know, how did you find that music was the way for you?
Well, it's funny because I find sometimes people think that I left law to become a musician. And they'll say, you know, people usually go the other way around. I've heard that a few times.
Yeah, right.
And they'll, and they'll say, you know, why did you choose to leave a career where at least you knew you would be able to have a good life in terms of income level and that type of thing, to a world that is a lot more insecure, the world of being a musician? And I see the desire to frame it that way when you look at it in retrospect. But the reality was, for me, I had a breakdown. I didn't choose to leave law to become a musician. I was actually so shy. Law broke me of my shyness, but I was very shy before and never would have imagined that I could dedicate my life to performance. And it really was just finding that the only thing that felt like it had meaning was creating art through my guitar, and then starting to hit open mics, and then starting to play shows of my material, and then starting to make the connections with people that made me realize that that was the right thing for me, that that was actually my calling, you know?
That's great. Did you have a lot of musical background before this? I mean, was this something that you, in the, maybe in the back of your mind, thought you might pursue someday, or was it, did it really take this moment to make that happen for you?
It really took this moment. You know, like, I love music, but I always thought that the depth to which I would interact with it would be this little YouTube channel I had covering songs that I love that other people had written. I didn't feel like I had enough to share with the world yet for a very long time. And I didn't want to just write songs that wouldn't hit me in the same way as the songs that I wanted to listen to, you know? So it really was a matter of process. I had to go through all of that to be able to be in a position where I felt like it was, like I had something that I thought other people could benefit from hearing.
You know, Heather, I got to ask you something about a certain song on your new record, which came out in November, called Desert Message. Do I have that right? Desert Message?
Yeah.
So I was listening to the record today and I came across the song Ohio River.
Have you ever had to hold yourself back from the edge, I said? You answered yes and held my hand.
It's very blissful, you know, you're kind of like drifting down the river and all of a sudden there's a big change where like the whole band comes crashing yep. in. Like, it's real amazing and it really caught me off guard and really woke me up. What was the inspiration behind that change in that song? And it happens twice, I believe. If you listen to the whole track, there's two right. sections.
Yeah. Okay, so
what was that? How'd you write that?
That song, I mentioned a little earlier that I released two songs that were acoustic, one of which yep. had a pedal steel track on it. Those were recorded in Cincinnati. I went down there and spent quite a period of time over little bits and pieces of January, February, and March of 2018 recording. And what we would do is, it was almost like a vampire type of existence. We would get up late in the afternoon. I was staying over on the Kentucky side of the river, And we would drive up to the north side of Cincinnati, and we would go to an abandoned factory where the recording studio was in the basement. And we would record all night, and then we would go and walk around the streets and walk over the bridge that went over the Ohio River. Valentine's Day of 2018 was the day of the Stoneham massacre. All of the flags were at half mast. There was this massive flood, and so many portions of the low-lying areas surrounding the river were completely obscured by water. And the song is set in that kind of idyllic but extra real, like supernatural type of space, where all of the borders were off and different and wrong. And the message of the song is, I met a few people when I was down there who told me that they were one thing when really they were something else. And I think we do that a lot as people, you know, even if we're not intending to.
Totally. Yeah.
Totally. So I found an interesting parallel between the people who did that and the river. The vast majority of the river there is actually in Kentucky, you know?
Nice. Yeah.
So I play with that in that song. The inspiration behind the quiet verses and then the extremely like heavy choral breaks was to highlight the depth of emotion that went along with that realization.
Nice. I love that. I've always loved the loud, quiet dynamic. And I don't know what you think, Scott, but it's underused, in my opinion. Like, more people should do that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree. I mean, you look at the shirt I have on right now, and I think you guys can figure out if I like loud, quiet, loud. I've got a Nirvana shirt on. So
I used to live in an Ohio River town, which was Louisville, and that dynamic sort of reminded me of the fact that, like, it can be at certain points of the river can be sort of flowing and gentle and whatever, and then it could really speed up and you hit like the Falls of Ohio, right?
Totally.
And that's where you know, you it really explodes, right? So, you know, I can see that, how you hear the sound of moving water, I think, in that song.
Yeah. Well said. Beautiful change, song, right? Yeah. Well said, Jim.
But, and for me, it's a standout track on the record.
Totally,
honestly,
man.
It's an amazing song. Once I got to that song on the that track on the record, I already loved it, but it just put me over the edge. To be honest with you, it's a standout track.
Scott, what attracted you first to Heather's music? What did you have that moment where you walk into a club and just be like, "Oh, I love that," or what was it?
Well, I mean, this is the first time that she and I have actually ever spoken, to be honest with you. We have communicated online exclusively. I mean, we've been in a Facebook Molina group and just have had conversations back and forth about Molina. And again, I watched some of her Facebook or YouTube videos about the covers of the Molina songs and enjoyed those. And then I've just kind of followed her career. Her voice to me is amazing. I mean, it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yep.
And then you dig into the lyrics and you can just feel her emotion. You can just feel that she means exactly what she's saying. And, you know, I'll talk about her previous release before Desert Message, Trauma Bonding. It is basically like a Molina record, to be honest with you. It reminds me of a lot of Molina's EPs, the tour releases only, the ones that aren't those wide releases that are lo-fi, and it's just him and a guitar, and that's what Trauma Bonding is, and it's just beautiful. I love it all. So that's kind of what kind of got me, is not only her love for Molina and just hearing her sing those songs, but that I get the same thing as I do from Molina, from the music that she's written.
Very nice. he does something to you.
He changes
when you hear him. It totally
does. When you get it, you're a different person.
Yeah, he connects with you on a weird level that you didn't know existed. So yeah, totally. Well said, Scott. Yeah.
Yeah. So Heather, besides Jason Molina, I have to ask the standard like music journalist question. Who are your influences?
Oh my goodness. Well, obviously he is probably the top in ways that I can't even identify consciously because I listen to his music almost exclusively for so long, right?
Totally.
With respect to this record, people I was thinking about were Cat Power. I thought about The Greatest. You can hear that, I think, in Lovejoy, maybe a little bit in Seasons as well. I'm a huge fan of Jennifer Castle. So she's a Canadian dream folk musician. She recently toured with Kurt Vile. Wilco is a big influence. Pretty, you know, I listen to a lot of Richard Buckner, Damian Jurado. Gillian Welch is a massive influence of mine. I think those are like the highlights.
Yeah. Did you say Richard Buckner?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that guy. Do you know him, Jim?
Not really, no.
Oh, he's great. I love Buckner, man. I don't think enough people know about that guy. Scott, do you know Richard Buckner?
I do not, but so, I'm going to look him up right now.
Oh, you got to look him up, man.
Basically, he's maybe awesome. Maybe my next so box tell us. On Richard Buckner.
Yeah, totally. I haven't heard much about him recently, but I've always been a big fan of his. You know, he sings in a very haunting, you know, husky style, similar to what you do, Heather, and like it's very intimate. And I saw him play once, you know, way back in the day in D.C. at the old place, Jim, right there in Arlington, the little tiny place whose name's escaping
Iota?
Me. Iota, yes. And before he started the show, he came out with his acoustic guitar and said, I wish everyone was wearing pajamas and we could all lay down and go to sleep. Because he sang those kind of songs like lullabies, but they were really haunting, like weird dreams. So I love that reference, Heather. That's great, man. We'll do an episode on Buckner and catch everyone up.
Sweet.
So, Heather, tell us about the song Lovejoy.
So in terms of the chronology of the events that the record covers, Lovejoy starts the earliest. I guess it's a little arguable. It kind of covers some of the same ground as Trawler. But Lovejoy is the name of a neighborhood in Buffalo, and it's a pretty tough neighborhood. I spent a weekend there, actually. This is where I met back up with this con man. When I was describing the story a little earlier for you, I told you about how I met him at a cabin in New York State. He came up from Florida. I came down from close to Hamilton. He then went back down to Florida with the promise that he was going to come up to Canada and we were going to see, you know, what would happen with this relationship. He was going to stay with me for a while. And then this unbelievable series of obstacles stood in our way, and he would disappear and reappear, and he had every excuse in the book that I was very willing to entertain him on, because I was head over heels in love with this guy. Anyway, I had almost fully given up when in September of that year, so this is from March until September, he told me he was going to come up to Buffalo. He had gotten a room at this bed and breakfast that actually used to be a nunnery. And he asked me to come down and see him. And it was just so romantic and unbelievable and out of this world and unlikely and improbable. And I couldn't say no. So that song tells the story of me driving down, crossing the border at the City of Light, which was the nickname Buffalo had for years, and driving down to Lovejoy. And I describe exactly in that song what it felt like to pull my car up and see this character that I didn't even know was real, and today I could tell you I don't think he ever was, materialize out of the light on this porch and walk up to me and bring me up to his room and give me gifts that I now wonder, did he actually buy them? Did he steal them from somewhere else, you know? So that song is kind of an ode to that hope and to the breakdown of that hope.
Wow.
Drove down to Lovejoy. Slow death around me. Took the border at the City of Light. Would have done anything that night. Turn on the moorland. Saw you as I came around. Immersion. same old affection. Yeah, you'd hurt me. Took me up to your room, gave me gifts you had stolen. Had to catch your crooked smile to look so even.
It's a powerful song. Absolutely. I'll tell you that right now. It's I heard that song and you know, I messaged you. I said, is all of this autobiographical? And you came back and said, yes, this is. And it's, you could just feel it, and it's so powerful. And you just, I feel bad. I feel bad listening to it and enjoying it, because I know that it wasn't fun for you to go through what you did to be able to make this art that we are now enjoying. So.
Well, you know, in the end, a lot of people come up to me after performances and say that the last couple of lines of that song really hit them. And those are, when I tell the story, I leave out how I loved you. When I tell the story, I leave out how I love you. And I think mm-hmm. a lot of people really identify with that piece, even if the rest of it isn't quite within the world of what they've experienced, you know? Because of that, and because of how important it is to this massive transformation that happened in my life, I needed to do that song as a full band arrangement. So, you know, there's a version of it out there, the acoustic version that you first heard, that is its own thing and it has its own kind of feel. And then on this new record, there's the full band version with Mike Brenner's pedal steel and with this like almost positive kind of sounding rhythm section in behind. And I'm just really proud of how it brought that song fully to life.
And I get exactly what you said about that. It's almost a totally different song from the original one that I heard. I love both versions, but mm-hmm. That pedal steel from Mike Brenner, I mean, it just totally makes the song. And I do get more of a positive, you know, positive sound from you and from your voice versus that the acoustic version that I first heard. But I think both are amazing, to be honest with you.
But you raise an interesting point, Scott, which is this. I'm curious, from a musician's point of view, an artist's point of view, when you put something out there that is so intensely personal as you have done, Heather, how do you deal with the reactions, right? Yeah. I'm assuming that some people really connect with you about that, but others might just be like, hey, that song really rocks, right? Like, is that okay? Or, you know, do you want people to feel a certain way? Or are you okay with sort of like whatever they get out of this song?
I think that what you have to do as an artist is put your art out there and then just let people find what connection they have with it, you know? Sometimes I struggle with whether I even want to tell the stories behind the songs because I don't want anybody who hears them to feel like their interpretation is invalid, because it's not, you know? For me, if that song touches someone in a way where they just say, hey, I like the melody, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's as deep as they can get with it or want to get with it, that's absolutely fine. But it's a very special treat, I suppose. Like, it's a very special thing to find people who identify with it in the same universe that I do, right?
Well, yeah. You know, Jim, it's a really interesting question, and not to go down a rabbit hole, but, you know, the Residents years ago brought up this same topic, like, do you create art in a vacuum, right? So would your art be different, Heather, for example, if you knew no one was going to hear it? Or how important is it for other people to hear it versus it's cathartic for me?
Right. Well, you know, initially that song was written, and all of the songs on this record, they were written for personal catharsis. I just think
that's important. Yeah.
It's a special perk to be able to share them with people who identify with them.
I think it's fascinating, and I totally commend you for what you're doing. And tell people, Heather, how they can get the record and like how to download it and where is it? Is it on Spotify or how can we give you money for your great art?
Well, the best way is Bandcamp. So if you go on Bandcamp /Heather okay. Valley Music, you'll be able to find a link to purchase a CD. And I will ship that CD from you. And if you want it to be signed, just let me know. We can make that happen. You can also purchase it digitally through Bandcamp as well. Cool. And it's,
I didn't know that when I bought mine.
Oh yeah, that's right. You bought yours early, so I didn't have that set up yet. That was the dark ages of people having to contact me through Facebook Messenger and Instagram messaging. But yeah, I'm on all of the, every place that you generally can buy music online, you should be able to find Desert Message, and you should be able to find the EP that Scott referred to earlier, Trauma Bonding, which has a cover that I'm very proud of, done by an artist named Josh Dunlap, whose handle is @ChemicalMessiah on Instagram. I highly recommend people to check his stuff out. He was able to create visuals that I think fit this music better than anything.
Thanks very much, Scott, for setting this up.
No problem. I appreciate you guys. You know, I'll continue contributing. I get so much enjoyment from the podcast and just getting able to talk, you know, be able to talk to you guys. And, you know, I'm so happy to be able to have Heather on. I'm going to give a shout out to Mike Wagner. He was the one that kind of gave me this idea for giving his patron episode to another person at one point. And, you know, I love the community that you guys build up around this podcast. And it's just such a great thing. So.
You know, Scott, I'll say this. If people who listen to this podcast regularly don't know how much I love Scott, that it's amazing that you would, you know, not only donate to our show, but also, you know, take your opportunity to help someone else. As an independent musician myself, it's awesome, man. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you, guys. Thank you, Heather.
And we just love...
Thank you so much.
Totally.
You know, we just love discovering another musician who we can now, that's you know, right. listen to all of her work and enjoy that. So,
well, and that's why I did it. I wanted the community to know Heather. She deserves a wider audience than I think what she has currently right now. And I've told her before, I'm going to evangelize her as long as I possibly can. So
totally great, man.
It's tough out there, Heather, but you are on the right path being on this show. I think this is the
get ready for the fame and fortune, Heather.
Yeah, let this be the start of something big, right?
Amen, that's brother.
Right. This is the watershed moment right here.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Thanks very much, Heather. Thank you, Scott. Again, the name of the album is Desert Message from Heather Valley. You can find that on the streaming services, but really go to Bandcamp, lay down some cash, get the physical product. I know a lot of our listeners like to have the physical product of things, so
totally.
You're going to want to do that. And that's how you can how you can find that, right?
Totally.
And also, again, to everyone who might want to be like Scott, be on the show, pick the topic, have your friends on, you know, highlight other people, do whatever. We'll go off in just about any direction you want to go.
Sure, man.
Go to patreon.com/suburbspod. And then if you want to comment at all on this show or any other episodes we've done, you can call. This is where the number comes in. I'm going to throw this one over to Scott there in Valparaiso. 612-440-1984. Very good. Or email rock@suburbspod.com or find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of those with the handle suburbspod. And Heather, are you on the social medias?
I'm on all the social medias at Heather Valley Music. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that.
Sweet.
All right. And you guys saw, I tilted the Skype camera a little bit earlier and you saw the famous Shadow.
Shadow.
Yeah.
Soon to have his own Instagram. We're working on that.
Oh, there we go.
You better be.
It's going to break the internet for sure. All right. Heather, is there a song we should play out with?
Oh, why don't we play out with Trawler? I just released a video for it yesterday. And
it's great. Listen to that today. It's really good.
That song is the oldest song on the record. Nice. It was the first song that was written and the first time it was ever played. I was sitting on my love seat in the middle of this cavernous living room. I had no other furniture because I had been paying for the con man's apartment in Buffalo that whole fall. He was strumming the chords. I was singing the song. Neither of us acknowledged that it was really about him. And that was just a couple weeks before he got arrested at the border in front of me.
Okay. All right, so we'll hear that. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
With us is...
Scott Parks.
And thank you, Heather Valley. And
we'll thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
We'll hear the song now. And we'll talk to everyone later. I got so much bourbon in these veins, I don't think anything is going to catch